Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Joseph Huff. I'm a public defender. My registration number is 34384. I represent the defendant, Clarence Banks. Since this court has heard a lot of different and various arguments today, I think it would behoove us all to sort of refresh our memories and the facts of this case, and I won't get too far into that. But basically, this was a denial of a 35C. My client alleged a number of grounds that his counsel had been ineffective, both trial counsel and appellate counsel. I decided today, given the time constraints, and I'm going to focus in on only one of those claims as far as ineffective plea counsel. And that's the one I start with in my brief. And that is the misadvisement of what Mr. Banks was facing in the event that his deferred judgment and ultimately probation was revoked. As you'll note in my opening brief and in the petition that Mr. Banks filed, he claimed that his counsel told him, "You are facing a maximum of 8 years in prison." Now, of course, we all know that that's completely contrary to the indeterminate sentencing scheme that was operating at the time. I will admit the court did tell Mr. Banks briefly, albeit briefly, but he did tell him, and I'll read the exact quote here, "There's a possibility of a minimum of 2 years to the remainder of your life." The court went no further in the explanation of that. And in the mountain of plea paperwork, there was one or two sentences that mentioned indeterminate sentencing. But no one ever discussed with Mr. Banks on the record what indeterminate sentencing meant. And no one imported to him the fact that if he messed up probation, if his probation was revoked, he wasn't facing nearly 8 years in prison, as his counsel had advised him. He was facing the rest of his life. Now, let me be very clear, we're not asking for this court to reverse. We're not asking for a new trial here. All we're asking for is a hearing to fairly present our side of the case. Now, Mr. Banks will get up there and presumably say, "My attorney advised me 8 years. Now, yes, the court said some stuff to me, but I wasn't in my right thinking. I was just going purely based on what my counsel was telling me was the maximum sentence." His counsel is then free, called by the prosecution, to get up there and rebut that if he can, but he may very well not. He may very well agree. You know, this sex offender sentencing had only been operational for approximately 2 years at the time. I wasn't fully aware of what indeterminate sentencing meant. And yes, I do recall, it's on my file, I did misadvise Mr. Banks that he was only facing 8 years. It's not simply enough that the court mentioned life. It's not enough that buried in a mountain of plea paperwork, the word indeterminate shows up. It's what Mr. Banks was thinking at the time. And did he enter this plea knowing involuntarily based upon the advice of his counsel, whether it was effective or not? And we're arguing that there's nothing in the record that directly contradicts Mr. Banks' claim that his attorney told him, "You will face no more than 8 years if you take this plea agreement." Now, I want to remind the court again that the standard here is de novo, and there's really no factual disputes in the record. Everything's out there. We all agree on the facts. So this court has the ultimate decision in applying the law and determining whether the court in this case made the right decision. The standard for getting a hearing under these circumstances, which is all we're asking for is a hearing, is very low, and I'll repeat that. Must grant a hearing unless they are clearly established that the allegations presented in the defendant's motions are without merit. Defendant need only assert facts that, if true, would have provided a basis for relief. That's precisely what Mr. Banks did. He provided facts that, if true, would provide a basis for release. I was misadvised as to how much time I was facing in a lifetime sentence case.
Counsel, is it your position that if his counsel misadvised him, it doesn't matter what the court told him?
The court can factor that in, and I would expect the court at the hearing to factor that in and say, well, Mr. Banks, you were present, you heard, you acknowledged when I said this or that, but what matters is what Mr. Banks actually thought. Everybody knows that the plea process is a sausage factory. There's all kinds of things that go on that shouldn't, and inadequacies. And if your attorney, who you've been with since day one, is advising you that you're facing 8 years, when the court gets up there and rattles off all this legal jargon, you're not going to be inclined, or you wouldn't be expected to accept or understand necessarily all of that when you've been given contradictory information from your counsel. And the court's finding here in denying Mr. Banks' claim was that the paperwork the defendant signed and initial clearly informed the defendant of indeterminate sentencing, and therefore his trial counsel did explain indeterminate sentencing to him. Now, there's a few things wrong with that finding. First of all, the paperwork did have the term indeterminate in it. But as I point out in my brief, it was absolutely buried in a mountain of legal jargon, statutory terms, legal principles that are inapplicable to this case. I went back through the plea agreement. 9/10 of it has absolutely nothing to do with any individual case. It's just generic stuff that they stick in, boilerplate stuff.
But your client initialed next to every paragraph.
He did.
Indicating that he had read it. And when asked if he understood it by the court, he said yes.
But the problem here is that he's saying, I didn't know. Yes, I might have initialed. Just like when you buy a car or you sign up for a Microsoft application, you click yes, you sign the bottom, even though there's tons of paperwork that goes. Not everybody reads that. And when your attorney tells you you're only facing 8 years, here's a mountain of plea paperwork, sign it, you sign it. I was a trial attorney for a lot of years, and that's what happens. It's ugly. It's the sausage factory of the criminal justice system. But that's the reality. That's what happens.
Is the net result of your argument then that essentially every case deserves a hearing?
I don't think every case deserves a hearing, because a lot of claims that clients make are facially contradicted by the record below, or they don't even amount to an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. In this case, the claim that he's making does in fact amount to an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. He's saying that my counsel misadvised me concerning the top range of the sentence I was facing, and that's analogous to the case Suddeth, where the defendant's attorney misadvised him concerning parole eligibility. But I would argue in this case that it's much more egregious, because we're actually talking about an indeterminate lifelong sentence. And it was very clear from the beginning when the court asked Mr. Banks, have you read this over? And he said, no, not really. And then he asked for more time, and that was denied, or the prosecutor said, we're not going to give him any more time, we're tired of games, or something to that effect. It was incumbent on the judge under those particular circumstances, especially when indeterminate sentencing was so new, that he confirmed with the attorney, now, you say you've been over this and you've explained it with him, but what exactly did you tell him about indeterminate sentencing? Did you tell him that meant he will spend his life in prison, potentially?
Why does the court have to do that? In addition to telling the defendant, you are possibly facing a sentence for the rest of your life.
I'm saying under these particular circumstances, it would have been helpful. I'm not saying that that has to happen in every case, and I don't think that this court needs to set a precedent that that needs to be part of the advisement. I'm saying it would have been helpful if the court would have done that, and I wouldn't even be here if the court would have done that. If the court would have said, Mr. Banks' attorney, what exactly did you tell him by indeterminate? I told him it meant he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison. Is that right, Mr. Banks? Yes. A one-sentence colloquy, two-sentence colloquy, and we wouldn't be here. I'm saying the fact that that didn't happen inures to our benefit, given the other factors. This is a multi-factored totality of the circumstances analysis that this court needs to engage in here. You can't take any one factor and say it's dispositive. You can't say because the court told him to life that that's dispositive. And you can't say because in the plea paperwork buried in amongst all these archaic terms, indeterminate, that that's dispositive. The court has to take all these things into consideration.
If it does, does that mean that it can't rely just on the one statement of the defendant that said, well, he told me 8 years in light of everything else that's in the record?
If there was something that directly contradicted that, then I would say this court could resolve that against the defendant. But there's nothing in the record that contradicts that claim in this case.
Does the defendant have any burden at the hearing to speak up and say, well, wait a minute, he told me 8 years? After the defense counsel was asked, did you talk about this? And he said, yeah, at length I talked about the implications of the consequences of pleading guilty with my client.
Well, when he says at length, that was never explained that meant you fully explained to him what indeterminate sentence meant.
And I'm asking, does the defendant have any responsibility, instead of saying, yeah, I've had enough time to talk to my counsel and I think he's done a good job here, does he have an obligation to say, well, wait a minute here, you just said something about life and that isn't what my lawyer told me?
What's the law
on that?
I don't know if he has an obligation or not. I know that if we were afforded a hearing, he would most likely get up, because I assume no one else would, and say, this is what my attorney told me. And I relied on that, and it was erroneous.
Why didn't he say that to begin with? Just what Judge Loeb is saying. Why doesn't he have an obligation to say, wait a minute, Judge?
Because
my attorney told me something different.
No one ever does that. No defendants interrupt the court and say, Judge, you just said up. They sit there and the court goes on and on in the Rule 11, and everybody knows this. I'm not going outside the record for this. They go on in the Rule 11, and as you can see, the Rule 11 in this case was extremely lengthy, at least as far as the plea paperwork went, and they nod their head, and they agree with the court. Ideally, he would be a legally trained person, and he would say, wait a minute, you just said life buried in this entire Rule 11. You did say the word to life, and I'm confused by that because my attorney said 8 years, and he didn't. And I wish he would, but he didn't. We're not dealing with a sophisticated lawyer here. We're dealing with a pro se pleading. And it's not going to be worded perfectly, but the point is to get a hearing, and that's all we want. We just want a 1-hour hearing where he's allowed to put on his evidence and make his case for an ineffective claim, and the prosecutor is fairly allowed to rebut that. And then the court can make its ruling at the end of that. That's all we're asking for. And there's ample, ample claims in this record to give him that. To just give him that little opportunity, that 1-hour hearing. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal if I could.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Ethan Swine, registration number 44794, and I'm here today on behalf of the people. No hearing was necessary in this case because the record establishes that Banks's claim lacked merit and did not warrant relief. With his respect to his claim about plea counsel, the record confirms that he was advised multiple times about the terms of his agreement. He initialed and signed every paragraph of that agreement and then signed at the end, including the sex offender addendum, and he told the trial court that he understood the agreement. That agreement explained that Banks was subject to indeterminate sentencing, and the majority of the other claims, including the right to a sex offender evaluation, SCP evaluation, and the completion of sex offender treatment. Banks also acknowledged that he had discussed everything he knew about the case with his attorney, including all the defenses available to him, and stated that he was happy with the attorney's representation and the advice his attorney had given him. Under those circumstances, I think it's clear that the record established that his claims lack merit, and therefore no hearing was necessary in this case. If there are no further questions, I would ask that this court affirm the trial court below. Thank you.
Thanks.
I would be happy with my defense counsel's advice too if he told me I was only facing 8 years when I was really facing the rest of my life. It doesn't matter that he was happy or that he said he talked with his attorney. The fact of the matter is there's nothing in this record that contradicts Mr. Banks' direct claim that he was misadvised by his attorney concerning the plea or concerning the sentence. Are there any further questions by this court at this time?
Well, thank you.
If not, then I would just please ask this court, just give him a hearing. Just give him a 1 hour hearing in the interest of fairness and justice. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank both counsel for your arguments, and they will be helpful in us reaching a decision in this case. The matter will now stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.